meeting on September 9th. It is 6:35. Let's begin with a roll call. Matt Dicci is here.
Harry Christine is here.
Bob Bessel.
Jen Dietrich.
And from town staff, we have Neil Pate. And from the public, can you introduce yourself, please? And can you spell your last name?
R-A-F-T-E-R-Y.
Thank you. All right, so any public comments? Okay. So why don't we jump right into the X Factory?
Okay, so we only got two responses to our request for cost estimates and work plan proposals for the DECD grant, the Brownfields grant. One was over budget, and one was right within budget. Evaluated both of them with the owner, and then submitted them to DECD. And one of the problems we ran into was, you know, some of the items that require the involvement of a subcontractor, like the market study and I think it was the energy audit. There's a classification in the DECD paperwork that only allows 25% of the budget to go to non-environmental assessment related activities. And the way in which those were bid by subconsultants to the main respondent, they came in much higher than that. So everything was within budget, but the way in which that those numbers are allocated didn't work. So I had to submit a request yesterday to DECD that I've been working on to try to get them to amend their budget allocations based on this market data. And these are real costs, not estimates that the original budget was put on. We know from private sector interests this is what it costs to do this work now. So they seemed amenable to adjust those budget items, line items, but I haven't gotten confirmation yet since yesterday. So that's where that stands. As soon as I get confirmation on that, we should be able to award that scope of work and actually initiate the Brownfield project.
Okay, this is still a remediation assessment.
It's remediation assessment with
marketing.
The market study and the energy audit and one other item I just forgot. There's four total items.
What kind of a time frame are we looking at to complete this?
Basically, it should all occur within a year once it's initiated.
Right.
What we were going to do, I've been talking to Lisa Tilney about this, and I have to clear it with town leaders, was that was an award from round 20. I think round 22 is just closing, maybe in the next 2 or 3 days. And Lisa Tilney and I talked about possibly putting a submission together for round 23 to get additional funds for whatever else might be needed that can be done during the environmental assessment stage. And then from there, I think next step would actually be cleanup money.
Yeah. So realistically, this thing really won't get underway until next year?
When you say this thing, you mean the DECD contract?
Yeah.
I mean that,
well, the actual, boots on the ground, shovels in the ground.
Yeah, that I don't know. I don't think anybody knows when there would actually be, true site development work for the completion of their site plan as opposed to what we've been doing recently, which is the brownfield work.
Yeah.
So this, if I got this right, so the steps from here would be, getting this piece of it done, and then you've got to hire someone to come out and actually do the work to clean up.
Yep.
Right. And then from there, they can start fulfilling the horizontal.
It's possible for things to overlap.
Okay.
So, a part of the site plan approval was to, and so it's contingent on how the final remedial action plan goes, but to actually use locations of new foundations for capping certain contaminants that are allowed to stay on site. So a lot of that all would have to get coordinated once we got to that point. But we don't have that. We're not at that point yet. And prior to that, I would imagine you will see the tax increment financing proposal to get pitched to the town, which this grant, the market study for this is a necessary component of the tax increment financing. So it's all layered.
I would imagine they would want to know the answer to that before, going too far.
Right. I mean, at the end of the day, the Tilney sisters are the developer, but somebody or an entity with additional financial means needs to enter the picture. And that'll probably be a layered package of a different source, number of sources.
Yeah. And are they still doing work at the site now in terms of like invasive species removal and that sort of thing?
I don't know. I know they were doing a lot this summer. I haven't been out to the site recently to see if it's continued or not.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Should we move on to item number two?
Yep.
Okay. I would imagine probably no updates to the 44 corridor study. But if there are, let's tackle that. But I would imagine the rail trail extension.
Yeah, I guess we should probably change 44 corridor study to so it's synonymous with the SS4A grant, because that's kind of the next step of transportation planning we're doing with the town. We kind of kicked off that project last Wednesday with the Public Safety Committee, where I had Mark Moriarty, who was the Public Works Director from New Britain, actually grew up just around the corner in Burlington. And he just completed an SS4A project for a community safety action plan for the city of New Britain. And so he came out and presented his process that they used and what some of the resultant products were, which what they did really just worked very well for their community. They got very good results. So before we started the process here, we kicked that off with his presentation. So my understanding is Public Safety or Board of Selectmen will be picking up that at one of their next meetings, and then they will possibly establish the process for how we're going to roll that out to the community and how it'll be monitored. And I think, you know, specific to EDA's interest, one of the issues that you could argue is during the corridor study, you had a consultant working on this that was not answerable to the town, but was answerable to an outside entity, right? And so I think one of the things you want to have here is you want to have a group of vested interests that represent the community involved in the consultant selection process, as well as oversight of this project, and then have that consultant that eventually gets hired, vetted by, and answerable to, you know, representation of this community, and try to get to a point where you have a very, you know, focused process. And one of the things Mr. Moriarty mentioned to me was, and I think maybe we ran into this with the 44 corridor study, was, you know, if you leave the consultant left alone, they're going to, you know, go through the project scoping, they're going to get a few ideas, and they're going to run with them, and then next thing you know, you're at the last meeting, and everything's the same. And we talked about how that seemed to be the appearance during the corridor study. Like, from the initial, you know, scoping meeting, the ideas that were initiated there never substantially changed through the subsequent public processes, right? So having, you know, select a consultant answer to a group of citizens or town representatives like that would be able to, okay, that was your scoping, but this has to evolve, and what are you doing? And, you know, you need that oversight, which we didn't have in the 44 corridor study. So there was a technical advisory committee, but it had no real authority. So anyway, that's keep that on your radar. That should be up at maybe the next one or two public safety meetings or Board of Selectmen meetings. And then the Farmington River Rail Trail, we did get the site plan reapproved at Planning and Zoning last month. It was there were some concerns raised by members of the public that we did our best to answer, but it ultimately was unanimously reapproved. And the only other thing was, we might have talked about it last month, but the contract for 27 Lawton Road, the portion to be designed in front of the Church of Latter-day Saints, has not yet been executed. Uh-huh. And I don't know if maybe representative of this board wants to reach out and find out more about that to kind of create some momentum or pressure.
Because there's a former member of this board is a higher up in that church.
Yeah.
But she's moved away.
Yeah, well, we have permission from the church to do the design, and we have the money to do the design. We have a contract to do the design. We don't have an executed contract at the moment. So I think that's just been backlogged on a desk somewhere.
All right, so no need to reach out and...
Not to the church, no.
Okay.
So who would we reach out to?
I guess all contracts go through one office, so we could walk you through that.
Okay. And what about through the shops? Any movement there?
Not since the last meeting, no. Everything I reported the last meeting is still current on that. So I think the owners are still working through the the process of showing the easement that the town and the shop's ownership, quote, agreed to through their tenant base.
Okay.
So I should get an update on that, though. Under development updates, I want to make sure I remember something else about the shops. Okay.
Everybody good with the rail trail extension?
I am.
Okay. Community survey, I don't have an update there, although I do want to take another pass through the presentation deck and get that wrapped up and presented to the Board of Selectmen. That is an outstanding item that needs to be finished.
Yeah.
I'm going to target next meeting for that. Business outreach. I suppose Russ wouldn't mind if I share this, but I talked to him the other day. He intends to step down from EDA in November. Mm-hmm. So with that, the business survey is going to have to be transitioned. So I've asked him to make me an editor in the Google Form doc that he created. So with that, this is, you know, put on pause for at least the time being. The next step is to send this survey to Kevin Whitcoast to get his, you know, sign off to make, you know, before we send it out.
Yep.
But I'll probably take another pass through the survey just to you know, make sure that we're asking the questions that we intend to ask. So maybe next meeting I can bring that forward again.
Do you need an approval from us before you share with Kevin, or can you share with Kevin?
Yeah, I thought that happened in July, the meeting that I was on vacation. But correct me if I'm wrong.
We never saw it.
I thought it was part of the agenda, but yeah, because I'm gonna take another pass through it anyway. So I will share before it goes to Kevin. I'll share with EDA.
Okay.
Developer outreach. You guys have any?
The only news that I have is that Canton Village sold.
Yep.
But we knew that. Did we know that last?
Yes.
We did. Yeah, we did.
So, yeah, nothing has really changed there. And Barry, did you have anything?
Any like whispers about what the new owners may intend to do?
Not really. I met with them probably a couple days before they acquired the property with Nathaniel, and we kind of laid out on the table, you know, all the past plans, concepts, everything that has occurred, and made sure it was clear what a significant interest it was to the town economically. And you try to explain all the ins and outs of the form-based code and the benefits of it. And the developments that have been approved surrounding the village as well. And just made a pitch about, you know, the benefit of the regulations, but if the regulations don't work, you know, we come in and meet with the Planning and Zoning Commission, maybe do a new master plan, but I encourage them to you know, try to do some sort of master planning for the site if they're not going to maintain it as is, to really, really reinforce that they should, you know, spend some money and some time to master plan this with the commission and the community, and, you know, lead to a product that's, you know, would hopefully be a win-win.
What does that mean? I don't follow.
It means if they're looking to redevelop, it just don't pick one lot at a time and just put whatever you think might be best there into an application, submit it, and then show up at Planning and Zoning and wonder why maybe it didn't go so well or didn't work with the regulations or whatnot. So the idea is, you know, give some careful thought to what you're intending to do with it and work with us to try to, you know, help you navigate our process so you can have a successful outcome.
You're talking about sort of having a, it's sort of like a unifying theme, if you will.
Yep.
Unifying design, and then, you know, as different businesses come in or as they do the build out,
yep,
it's part of the overall plan.
Yep.
Sounds somewhat encouraging to me.
Yeah. Well, so, and I mean, it seemed like the right thing to do, but there's been no communication since either, which I don't know if that's a bad sign or they're, you know, getting their ducks in a row. It's a major property acquisition, so.
No news is no news.
Right.
Does it include any land that is not built on yet that could be? Or is it strictly the existing buildings and there's no room for anything else?
Well,
the part that they acquired?
The whole site's been developed. I think there's probably very few square feet of site that hasn't been developed there. So everything, you know, to me and in the process that we've talked about over the years, everything's up for grabs. You know, the zoning would allow quite a bit of change to occur there that's in place right now. You know, we saw concepts like the median roadway for the corridor study, which I showed them, and we've had you know, other master plans for the property. We had a shrep by the UConn students way back when, and so anything could really happen with it. But you obviously have, on the one side, you have a couple of individual property owners that are, you know, really interested in what they've improved and probably wouldn't want to deviate, you know, their footprints or their structure if they could avoid it, unless it was economically beneficial for them to do so.
I mean, I did have an email conversation with Bizzuto's real estate person, and he said that, you know, be happy and willing to work with whoever, you know, whatever comes down the pipe. But until something comes down the pipe, we don't know.
Right.
Facade improvement program. Did anyone have a chance to look through the document that I put in the Dropbox last meeting?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah.
You want to have a conversation? Are we prepared to have a conversation about it in terms of, I'd like to come up with it at a minimum, like what our next steps are and a timeline to hit them. But in terms of, you know, comparing the draft plan that we have to what other folks have successfully already implemented, I'd love to get any feedback that you guys might have.
Well, I would have to say that I reviewed it before, and I can't say this. Then I shouldn't review it again before I make any comments.
Yeah, my thought was that it's a lot more thorough and complete than anything I've seen up till now, and I was really encouraged by it. But I agree with Jen. I think we'd have to come back to it and really go through. Maybe this is a.
At least in my mind, I think our initial draft from whatever year it was. I think it was a, they were loans, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
I think the funding source of those loans was still up in the air.
We were going to try to use STEEP, and the year we were going to petition to apply, STEEP changed its rules where the investments had to occur on town property, which killed this idea. But I don't know if I think they've removed that.
And George had came across a different potential funding source.
Yeah.
If I remember right. I don't remember what it was.
Yeah. And I was supposed to get him and the guy from Kent Main Street together to review this. I have not done it. And
okay.
I don't know where George is.
Yep. I do think that we should not use any kind of any town money as a lending source.
Yeah.
I think that's a bad idea.
I thoroughly agree.
Yeah. And then in terms of the overall administration of it, I think that's another key component. I don't know if the town finance guy could have a role, or if that's even would that be allowed or forbidden? But who handles the money aspect of this thing? Because I think the administration of it would probably be EDA and then, you know, Board of Selectmen.
Well, a concern when this came up several years ago and it was brought before the Board of Selectmen was that if it's a loan program, unlike the homeowners improvement program, which has been up and running for a while, this is kind of a business loan, and business loans are different. They just, you know, you're looking at a lot more stuff to see if the person takes out that loan actually is capable of paying it back. So, so the selectman at that time felt that a bank or some, you know, that somebody that is, an entity that does this all the time would be a better place to go. This, I don't believe, is a loan. So this is something else.
This would be, in my mind, it would be a grant, but
yeah.
But the business owner would need to have some skin in the game too.
Yeah, yeah. So it was kind of like a matching grant
yeah.
kind of deal, and the idea is that the town would be would be repaid in increased property value.
Right.
You know, taxation right. on increased value. Yeah, which makes sense.
And then hopefully momentum behind, you know, the next person doing it or new business coming in or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
I recall the Weathersfield program started as a loan and then eventually transitioned to a forgivable loan.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But one of the problems, though, is then, you know, you're contingent on that annual outside funding source, which is unpredictable.
Mm-hmm.
If we could get in a routine for, like, say, something like STEEP and get a decent pot up front and then demonstrate that we've gotten results and apply year after year, that could work. But you have to really try to get results initially quickly or else they'll be hesitant to refund it. And then the other meeting, we threw out that Empower Main Street program, mm-hmm. and that allows their funding to go towards facade improvements, but it's a max of $10,000, which is not a lot.
Right.
But it's a start.
Yeah, but that's yeah. something else we could talk about. I know, I think the What's Main Street program was looking at using that round.
What's our deadline on that one? Was it November?
November the 4th, I thought.
Yeah, it's November 14th.
All right.
The 14th.
But I think there's, you know, competition for that locally also now that it's gotten out there, and we also made Main Street aware of it.
Yeah.
You know, we talked about using it for the streetscape improvements. They're, I believe, talking about using it to get a permanent cover for the square.
Oh, yeah, for the slab.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe it would be a good use of time for next meeting, and I can do this, is to take our existing draft of the facade improvement program, turn it into a PowerPoint presentation that we can go slide by slide, and I think you're kind of outlining what the program would be, and I think that might help flush out where our questions are and where we need to, you know, focus in terms of any changes we might want to make.
Sounds good.
I think that's probably a better way to go about doing yeah. this.
But
so
I think
I'll do that for next meeting.
Yeah, I think the big thing is that we need to start moving this thing forward.
Yeah.
We've lost momentum on it.
In the meantime, is it possible to figure out if, like, who could handle, like, the changing of the dollars?
Yeah, I guess so. Our new finance director, Zoe Peek, she came from, I think it was South Windsor, mm-hmm. so we could ask if they had any familiarity with that over there and how it was done.
Okay.
I think that is a threshold question of who actually manages this.
Yeah. Yep. So I think the way other towns have done, at least the selection of the, you know, and awarding of the program, who receives the money, was done by, you know, board, like, similar to us, with the direction of the Board of Selectmen as well, getting the final approval.
The evaluation.
But the evaluation.
So we get the applications, evaluate them, and then recommend
to selectmen, yep. approve. But then someone's got to do the financial
paperwork.
Part. Yeah. Okay. Canton Economic Landscape. I have some data to share.
Yay. Data.
I don't know if anyone has a printed copy for those that don't have a laptop. If not, I can use my computer to share it. It's called the Canton, the Smart Investment. September.
Oh, is that your four slides? Four or five slides that you sent out?
It's seven.
Seven, yeah.
Do you
don't have to show me. I pretty much remember it, so.
All right. Bob, do you have a copy of it?
No.
All right, I'll just turn. Barry, you have it?
I have it on my laptop, yes.
Uh-huh.
So you want to just...
Sure.
You want to look with him?
Sure.
So I took a stab at compiling some data. The ultimate goal, at least the way I see it, but I would like some feedback, is how we can market the town to not only developers, but to potential business owners. So starting on slide 2, and this is my first stab, so I think there's more data to probably add here, but this is kind of like what I'm seeing through the data. So the way I looked at it was to start with the local region around us in terms of the demographics, and then kind of focus on why, the region is attractive, but then, if you're interested in the region, then you maybe should focus on Canton. So if you look at the Farmington Valley, and the Farmington Valley I've identified through the following towns. So obviously Canton, Avon, Simsbury, Farmington, Granby, Burlington, although I did add in Barkhamsted and New Hartford, which is not in that disclosure on the bottom. But this chart represents all those towns in terms of the Farmington Valley. If you look at the Farmington Valley, which is all the way on the left, compared to not only the state of Connecticut, but all the underlying counties within the state, the population growth has been outpacing everywhere else except for the five-year period. And the five-year period contains COVID. So the two areas that are outpacing Farmington Valley over those two time periods is Fairfield County and Litchfield. And my thought is you probably had COVID exodus from New York City.
Yes.
People going into Fairfield County and then to kind of escape the chaos into Litchfield Hills.
So you're saying that Farmington Valley is, if not the fastest growing area in Connecticut, one of them.
Yeah, I mean, could you take like individual towns within Fairfield County and kind of do what I did, where I stripped out, I didn't use Hartford County, I didn't use the towns within. Could you do that in Fairfield and come up with better numbers? Probably. But looking at it through this lens, Farmington Valley versus all the counties, we're growing fast or faster.
It would be interesting it'd be interesting to see if Fairfield County had a big COVID bump because of people exiting New York Metro, and now has flatlined, and we're
we flatlined during COVID, and now we're going maybe up.
Yeah.
Well, if you look at the 1 and 3 year period, that would kind of give you a sense that Fairfield County continues to do okay.
Yeah, they're.
Which is beyond that initial COVID bump. Which would have been like,
well, they're not too happy either, probably, with the state of New York City right now anyway.
Well, be that as it may, in comparison to I think it's a powerful statement to say, this is it. I mean, this is where good things are happening.
Yeah, so if you're a developer and you're looking for a place that's growing or an area within a state that's growing, they definitely should be looking at Farmington Valley, is what this data is suggesting. If you go to slide 3, focusing on Canton. Mm-hmm. Canton we're actually growing again. So if you recall from that other presentation that we had on the Canton economic landscape, it showed our population growth being stagnant.
Okay.
Being stagnant, if not negative, over the last 10 years. We've seen an actual uptick in population over the last year or two, and I would imagine that has everything to do with some of the apartments coming online, and maybe even the Applegate farms starting to impact those numbers as well.
Do we have anything on grandless growth?
I could look at that.
Because population is one thing, but grandless growth is another. And other measures like per capita earnings.
Ah.
He has that.
Ah.
Yeah. See, I haven't seen this.
But I have a question. I have a question about that grand list, though, because we brought up, what was that, about 3 months ago, that with one of the new apartments, it was questionable about whether they were contributing to the grand list? That was 3 or 4 months ago?
They were contributing, but it was phased in. So it wasn't that initial big pop that you would have expected.
Okay.
Yeah, but it is.
So we have an answer for that.
It is contributing, but over a couple of years. It's going to take to get
to 100%.
Yeah.
Which then we'll get it every year.
Exactly, yep.
And we've got a cannabis shop.
And we do. We do. So I think slide 3 is somewhat powerful, the fact that we're on the up again. Slide 4, going back to the Farmington Valley. So Bob, to your point, in terms of, you know, kind of what we're looking at in terms of socioeconomic data. So of all those towns that I talked about in the Farmington Valley, we have a population of 111,000, so a decent amount of people living in this area. The median household income is $135,000. And I'll put some more context to these numbers on the next slide in terms of how that compares to benchmark averages, but that's a pretty strong number.
Can we get some ESRI categories? You know, kind of like the, what is it, the...
Savvy Suburbanites?
Yeah, Savvy Suburbanites, Country Squires, there's... couple of categories that we're very strong, Farmington Valley is very strong in, that are very attractive to people looking to situate a business or...
So is it just another way of grouping towns?
Yeah, but also to describe who's living here.
Where have you seen that data? Where did I find that?
There's a guy in town who started a... health and wellness sort of consortium, and he had some marketing data put together for him, and it was very persuasive. At this point, it's a couple of years old. I've asked him to share it, and he's been kind of wishy-washy, but I saw it, and it was pretty good stuff. But, you know, you want it, that kind of stuff you want fresh. But it is, you know, it's very definitely a, you know, an attractive community. Mm-hmm. I think the other thing is you may want to just look at the kinds of stores that have located here. I mean, Whole Foods it's kind of like a sign. You know, it's like those guys don't put a store here, you know, unless it meets certain demographic characteristics. Same thing with the stores that are in the shops. The performance of some of those stores, like the ShopRite, for example. I mean, it's a hugely successful store. it kind of belies the population of the town. It's just got this incredible draw, And then the kinds of restaurants, the kinds of retail offerings that are in that are there. Sur La Table coming back to it. Mercado opening up. I mean, 110 Grill. I mean, some of these guys, I've been told they were sort of like pulled, you know, sort of like kicking and screaming, oh my gosh, we don't want to go there because it seems the population's so, you know, sparse. But once they've been here, they're like, wow, wait a minute, this is a different animal than we thought. Much better.
So essentially slide 4 just says that, you know, it's an affluent area, it's well educated, and it's stable with the population growth.
Yeah.
On slide 5, so how does Canton compare to all those numbers and to the state? So looking at household income, median home values, educational components, we either match or exceed the Farmington Valley data, and we far outpace state averages. So, you know, if you had to highlight Canton in terms of, you know, what type of town are we, I would call it affluent, educated, and economically vibrant.
Yeah. I mean, I wish there were some statistic that would talk about how cool we are.
Yeah, I was going to say the quality of life here, the fact that it's right outside your door for most of Canton is really unusual.
I think some of the survey data could probably find its place into a piece like this in terms also, of why people live here and why they're happy.
And why they like to come here. I mean, people come to Canton, you know, from the surrounding towns because there's something here. And it's not just shopping, you know, it's not just money. It's, you know, there's art, there's culture, there's things going on. And it's not your typical stuff.
I think it harkens back to, and this is my 95-year-old father who loves to come over every Sunday for breakfast at LaSalle's. It reminds him so much of the old Greenwich of his youth in the 1930s and 40s. That was a little village, and, you know, kids could ride their bicycles there. It was safe.
Right.
You know, it was, you know, even in times of World War II or what have you, it was still a safe enclave. I guess that's what it is. It's an enclave. It's this little peninsula, you know, and then, of course, it's very convenient to Route 44 and that whole retail and business. But it has that wonderful old feel to it. It's old, but it's new.
Right, right.
And it's reinforced by, you know, downtown Collinsville, events like Christmas in Collinsville, that kind of stuff, Farmers Market.
Halloween Parade.
And then recreation is really key, too.
Yeah.
You know, and the historic component that here's a working village. Very cool museum, canoe and kayak, the skiing, the ski area, and the river rafting, the tubing. I mean, there are, you know, 12 months out of the year, there are reasons for people to come here, and they do.
Yeah, and I have some of that data on slide 7. On slide 6, though, in terms of kind of the visibility of the town, I mean, on Route 44, we have 18 to 22,000 cars passing through per day. So there's a lot of potential customers that pass through. Obviously, we're close to Hartford, we're close to Bradley. Just a high amount of commuter and potential retail shopping traffic that passes through. But I think that kind of speaks to needing the Route 44 corridor to be inviting to want to stop.
Yeah.
And to be candid, there's really nothing about Route 44 through Canton other than maybe the area around the shops that makes you want to take notice and say, this looks like a pretty cool place.
Yeah.
And I have a comment that goes along that this slide actually spurred in me, and that is that at least down on 179, going from Ocean State back toward Collinsville, you know, there's the sign Historic Collinsville, and when you also come into it. It's a beautiful sign, but it's almost impossible to read. It's the kind of sage green with the dark green.
Oh, that was part of the scenic corridor study back in like 1990.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they're not easy signs to read, and they are somewhat old. And then where the, it seems to me that for Route 44, at least coming east to west, if you were coming from Simsbury or Avon or what have you, that having a better sign around the gazebo on the green saying, you know, Collinsville Historic District, that way.
That's the whole wayfinding signage. That
yeah, the whole wayfinding signs. Exactly.
Secure for a while.
You know, and of course, and that depends on the corridor study because that might not be able to be a left turn right there. You know, it may have to go up. But so I think signage could be improved, which we talked about, and that goes along with the visibility thing.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. No, I agree.
Yeah. New Britain's done had a huge effort on signage. I don't know ultimately how successful that their campaign was.
It looks very nice. I remember getting a presentation on that.
Yeah.
I believe I looked into their program, and I think it was It wasn't cheap.
Yeah, it was a lot.
It was a lot of money.
Yeah, they put a lot of money into it. Well, because they did a whole branding thing around the beehive.
They got grants, too, that we're not eligible for because you know, they meet certain demographic requirements and distressed municipality requirements, right, et cetera. So they get a lot of funding that, you know, we don't have access to because we're, you know, not as diverse and, you know, financially really well run.
Right.
So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But it's still a great program, but I mean, it would be good to do something like that. I remember for our streetscape project, we interviewed the consultant who did all the wayfinding signage at Keeney Park.
Mm-hmm.
If you've been in there, it's really well done. I was just in there for a cross-country race this weekend, and was still in really good shape and very helpful. So anyway, it would be great to pursue that at some level in the future. But I know Collinsville merchants were asking for it forever to get people from, you know, 179 and 202 and 44 to know there's something to go south for. And same thing, like at the green, how much do you really know to go down? There's a village down there if you're not from around here and just passing through.
Yeah, or to know that there's a Canton Clay Works, or that there's, I mean, there are all these gems that are kind of like tucked away that you just don't see.
How far down the path did we go with program like this in the past? Did we ever come up with like a design or anything? Or
no, we started to, I think it was Greg Basoka's wife was starting to actually put together images, mm-hmm. and then we got into the conversation of, okay, content, what words to use, what scale, what font stuff, and then
what
the conversation just fell apart.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just tough to do this with volunteers.
Yeah.
You know, you really need a big pot of money and a professional expert that knows how to do this.
Right.
Because
yeah.
otherwise we're really just guessing and going to make something look shoddy and not right. represent the community as nice as it should.
Yeah. I mean, you want something to be pretty, but it has to be legible.
Yeah.
You know, when...
You have to be able to read it at 45 miles per hour.
You know, like a $10,000 right. grant isn't going to do it.
Yeah.
And then you still got to pay for the signs,
that's right.
too. So you need a lot of money.
At 45 miles an hour, those letters have to be really big.
Yeah.
Really big.
Yeah. So it's something we should keep on our radar as a, you know, goal, but it's just, it's a big challenge.
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe that's something if Steep gets limited to on-town property, that could be something to pursue, but we'd have to, again, have to, you know, it's not shovel ready because we don't actually have, if we had the program already developed, that might be better.
That would be better, yeah.
But
we'd have...
We need to develop the program.
So now we need
to
see
money to develop
need
the
money
program.
To get to a point where we could actually apply. But it would... That would be a good investment.
So to apply, you would actually need, like, all right, this is what the signs would look like. This is what the fonts would be. This is where they would be located.
Yeah, and here's a quote. And
right.
Here's a quote from
yeah.
from the vendor who will produce the signs, and here's the vendor who's going to install
right.
them, all of that. And here's the proof that the community... likes them,
right.
you know, is has their support for it.
We need to find a program that does planning and design,
yeah.
and so, you know, and in addition to installation or acquisition installation, but a lot of the programs want to fund real improvements that are going right now, and then knowing the community already has developed this is the skin of the game, right? And that's where we always end up with, we don't ever seem to have the money to do the initial things that we need to do to get to that next level where we can actually get things built.
Yeah.
Okay, and then kind of just wrap it up, my thought was, and I don't have answers to this stuff, but on slide 7 is, you know, why should developers focus on Canton instead of Avon and Simsbury and Farmington and all the other towns around us? And I was trying to find if there's any data that suggests that land acquisition costs are cheaper in Canton than Avon or Simsbury or Farmington.
Tricky.
Well, we still have land. Avon, from what I understand, really doesn't have any more buildable sites.
And virgin sites, you're talking.
Yeah, virgin.
So we're talking, you know, rehab, you know, some
yeah.
kind of redevelopment. And we're doing a lot of that here, too.
I should try to get you the data, if I haven't done it already, the data from the Arnett-Muldrow study.
Mm-hmm.
And it's old, but, you know, for this last slide, they pulled together data showing, you know, how many people from, you know, our zip code analysis. We used to crack zip codes, people shopping in Collinsville in the shops. And then they pulled the data of where they actually live and what the, you know, levels of disposable income are in those communities. And basically showed like the shoppers that come to Canton have like the disposable income that's comparable to Greenwich. And you know, creates very high, you know, potential for why locate a retail business here. And then it was also a lot of how many dollars are we exporting versus importing, and the numbers of dollars being imported, being invested in the Canton market was much greater than most of our you know, area communities. So it was like really, really good data like that that could supplement a slide like this if we could get it updated. I'll
Right. If you could find that.
What is the name of that study? Arnett,
like
something
big,
or other?
Email, so
Arnett Muldrow.
I sent you another
Muldrow.
One. Okay.
Muldrow.
Muldrow? Muldrow.
See if I can get this. M-U-L-D-R-O-W.
That was paid for out of the Connecticut Main Street Program Preservation of Place grant.
We may be, you know, I'll tell you, we may be able to get some data from the Mitchells, because cars, autos, were a big component. There was the retail component as a result of the shops. But automobiles, there's a surprising number of automobile-related businesses along 44.
Mitchell, yeah.
You know, Mitchell, but it's not just Mitchell, it's European Car. It's, you know, there's all, you know, Dynamic Auto, and there's, you know, there's a bunch of them. And they're thriving. People come here and buy cars, and cars are big-ticket items.
Lava.
Yeah.
That was a shocker to me.
Yeah. They're killing it. They're killing it. Mm-hmm.
And what about, like, do we have any intel on our permitting costs relative to other towns? Like, is that all pretty much standard?
I think we do that. I think the building official did that when he got here, or maybe 2 years ago. But that does take some effort to put together. I don't think it's something that's readily available from, like, CCM, like salaries are and things of that nature. But we could look for it.
And is it safe to say that the form-based code, that streamlines the whole, or at least in theory is supposed to streamline the whole?
Yes. Yeah.
And do you know if other Farmington Valley towns have form-based code?
Just Simsbury Center, which it's not like ours where it still requires a substantial review process.
Okay.
No, I'm not aware of another one in the Valley anyway that's like ours. And I, you know, gave a presentation to Glastonbury about ours a couple weeks ago, because they're doing a comprehensive rewrite. And one of the things they struggle with, they get really good development projects there, but their process is very long because they control everything by special permits. And I showed them the types of products we're getting without special permits using the form-based code. And they're very intrigued by that, but very, very nervous to give up that special permit. But that creates a lot of risk and a lot of time. So that's kind of, you know, where we stand apart, where we have compressed the amount of time it takes for a complete application to get through the system. We're going to have a lot of problems with one that's not complete, and, you know, many are not. But, you know, we try to provide a lot of guidance to, you know, help applicants understand exactly what the rules are before we get too far along.
Okay.
But it is a fair thing to put there as a strategic advantage, in my opinion.
Yeah. If they're ready, if they've got a plan, we'll get them through.
Would you argue that we have flexible zoning?
Yes and no. I mean, we do. We're incredibly flexible compared to many other communities in what we allow and the scale and the everything. But we get very meticulous in, you know, the architectural and aesthetic details, and that was the trade-off. So, like, you know, I'm dealing with a very large project right now where, you know, the building permit plans don't exactly match what's on the zoning approval plans. And you might have to go back to the commission for that now. Like, yeah, you got your approval fast, but, you know, now you're changing things. And, you know, the way things look mean more than, you know, the regulatory bureaucracy. But so we get very specific on those types of details. But there's a wider range of what's allowed and where it's allowed here under a form-based code than in most other, you know, traditional zoned communities.
Okay. And what do you guys think about putting in tax incentive programs that we have in place?
Why not?
Well, because
they haven't really done much.
Who gets to decide those?
Well, here we're talking about the tax not taper, but trend for the apartment building that got built, you know, so obviously there is flexibility in...
There's, I mean, that was rejected.
Well, we were just talking about it, the fact that...
No, we're talking, you're thinking about the...
Oh, the tax increment financing?
Yeah, but are you talking about the...
The one that Blue House went, did in Winthrop.
Oh, okay.
But they, that's the only one we've approved.
Right.
We've only had two applications.
It's, the problem is it's, it doesn't offer a lot, and then the process of it is somewhat arduous too, and gets down to, you know, a, I don't know, it, if, it, it depends, I guess, I don't know, it's an untested thing really in this community, where communities that work routinely with the tax incentives, it's established protocol, it's established process, the public's aware, it works well. Here it's just such a controversial and has been somewhat hostile history to it. I mean, everybody likes the idea of a Blue House Bagel company, but, you know, it's more about what you might perceive as what you like versus what does it really mean for real world tax implications.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's, I guess, my concern.
Laurel Heights had, what, 20 to 30 times mm-hmm. the economic, you know, benefit to the town, but the town rejected it.
Right.
But then Blue House.
But I also do think some of these things need to be like the but-for argument, like our TIF too. I do kind of agree, like, maybe the Blue House, would they have gone in without it? Possibly, but would they be out of business without it? Possibly, because it helps reduce their routine operating costs. You know, the Laurels, they were already invested in the community, where they were too late to back out. Another project that would go to another community that we would have otherwise gotten if had we not offered that tax incentive, that's what we were really looking for.
Mm.
And that was awkward with like the Laurels again, is they applied for it after they got all their approvals. You know, I feel like timing wise it makes more sense to the public and to the everyday taxpayer if they apply early on, and this is something we need in order to come into the community, and then you get the community support for that grand list growth, then that's how it works well. But it hasn't worked like that in the two examples we have.
No.
And it gets kind of mucky and controversial, I think, because of that. You know, why should we vote for it? They're going to be here whether we do it or not.
Right.
Why give them a discount?
Right.
Yeah. And then it becomes almost like a popularity contest. Like,
yeah.
I don't like that project.
Right.
So I'm not going to, why should I,
right.
curtail, you know, tax revenue, you know, or taper it over time.
Right. And so town meeting is very unpredictable too, because it doesn't necessarily take a large number of people to, you know, control a town meeting. And every project you have is going to be near somebody's neighborhood and somebody's concerns. So again, it gets very unpredictable and hard to negotiate with a program like that, just practically speaking.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that we have these things in place is positive, but our experience has been checkered.
I don't want it to be like a sign that's a red herring, you know. Mm. We trapped you, but we didn't have anything we could ever really practically control to give you.
Right.
Gotcha.
So, sorry for the sidebar on that.
No, that's
helpful.
That's a tangent, I guess.
So I guess my question would be, outside of the data feedback we've already gotten, what else... One, is this even, do you guys think it's worthwhile to even pursue this thing?
Yes.
Is it going to be helpful?
Yes.
And what's the best format for something like this? Is it a PowerPoint? Is it more of a brochure? Is it just a series of data points?
I think a PowerPoint makes sense, one for like internal marketing, to, you know, we may try to sell this to, you know, decision makers and stakeholders here locally. And then the other part of it is, I think it's good to have a PowerPoint for whenever we do get, you know, development interests that want to sit down and actually talk to us. But then the other side of it is, when you're just trying to broadcast it out there, you know, to gather attention or interest, like, you know, like we're trying to pull people in, I think it has to be very concise, digital, and, you know, one page, you know.
Like a brochure, you know, basically.
Yeah. Or an infographic.
An infographic.
I've seen over and over and over again where the infographics are able to communicate to audiences that just would blow off a brochure or blow off, not take the time to go through a PowerPoint or sit through it or anything. I've seen these people like sit down and look at it and get the message. If they're designed properly, and there are designers out there who can do it, they're very valuable, incredibly valuable.
And then what data are we missing? What else would be helpful? So you mentioned grand list growth, the types of businesses that have been coming, those other groupings that you talked about outside of the county.
The shopping era, yeah. Demographic analysis.
Yeah, I don't think
that was a zip code one?
No. This is like a lifestyle. It used to be called ESRI. It's called something else now.
Dan Hunter pulled all the data for it.
Yeah. But also Arnett Muldrow had a subscription to it.
I will send you these two, and you will see. Bob and I only know it because we've been here too long. You will see if we were able to backfill some of these additional concepts into that with current data, I think it would be like home run.
Yeah. Okay. Yep. Yes. We have a high percentage or within that, if you do the sort of the radius, the bullseye kind of thing, a high percentage of country squires, big fish, little pond, a couple of these other categories that are extremely desirable to businesses.
Okay. This is too big for me to even send, so I'm going to have to ask Lisa to make a Dropbox.
Barry, from your perspective, what else do developers look for when they're scouting out a location or a town or a region?
Well, I go back one step even as I listen to all this. You've been here since the town was formed.
Feels like it. Feels like it. You were a young man when I first got here.
Does the town ever had in its history a paid new business development person?
Not that I'm aware of.
See, if this were a business, not a town, a business, yeah, what you're talking about would be undertaken by a new business development person. And every company that you can think of, whether it is Boeing or United Technologies or a bank or anybody else, in one way or another, has a new business development team that goes out and develops business. It's not an ad hoc program like we're talking about, and it's funded. Because the big issue, which is interesting to me, is if we ever had a program and we needed $500 to buy materials, well, we don't have that.
Yeah.
I think this is a very hard deal, the deal being the business of developing, of economic development in Canton. A very hard thing. We've got 98 strikes against us. First and foremost, the lack of money. Secondly, the fact that the people like Canton. I've been here 24 years, and the thing that strikes me, everybody loves Canton. And we like the trees and we like the roads and we like Collinsville and isn't it cute? We don't like apartments, we don't like condos, we don't like large buildings, we don't like it. And what I'm saying is I think in order to ever get anywhere, we would need to have to take the business of developing business in Canton and make it a paid for function, where you've got Matt Dingy, the director of development for Canton, and he's paid whatever that job pays, and he may have a support team, and he's got a budget to fund collateral work, and so on. For the last several years now, I've been watching this, and we go around the table, and we go, does anybody know what we can add here? And then it comes down to, what would it cost to put the survey out? Oh, $25. Well, we can't get that. How in the world could you get $25? No. I think Canton ought to come to a reality. and I think about this all the time, Canton should either come to a reality that says we like it this way. We like trees and little winding roads and not a lot of big buildings and a cute little town. And you know what? If it costs an extra $3,000 or $5,000 or $7,000 in taxes, I'll pay it. See, if you take me, my wife and I are two of us living in a 4,000-foot home paying $14,000 a year in taxes. I don't care. And if it was $16,000 a year in taxes, I don't care. If it was $20,000 a year in taxes, I don't care. We like it this way. And until Canton, the people say, can't afford it anymore, don't want it, can't afford to pay my tax bill, until then, my view of life is like the Boy Scouts trying to take the old lady across the street. She don't want to go. She don't want to go. Canton doesn't want to develop. They don't want developers to come in here. I mean, I think the Applegate farm thing is an abomination. I can't imagine anybody approved it. It's the worst looking project I've ever seen anywhere. I don't believe planning and zoning approved it, but I guess they must have.
Yeah, they did.
But it's awful if you look at it, just awful. And I can see why, and Jen wrote it one time, very compelling. What happens if you like single-family homes on one-acre lots and nice kids in nice schools, and we don't have the issues that you have in Britain or in some of the towns with lower demographics and lower economics, and we all like it? And if it means paying $2,000 or $4,000 or $5,000 or more a year in taxes, give me the bill. Not a problem. I think until Canton got to the point, or gets to the point, I hope maybe they never will, where the town folk go, enough. It's enough. Can't pay it anymore. Not going to pay it anymore. It's just like in the nation with what's going on now. If your taxes are high enough and your tariffs are high enough, sooner or later you'll have a revolt. Are we there yet? I don't know.
I almost feel like you're getting it from both sides. Like there isn't the appetite for a lot of development, but there's also pushback in terms of the tax increases.
Well, you know what? You're so right.
You're getting it both.
But the bottom line is, until the taxes are too much, too high, so that Bob Bessel, who lives in his nice house on the green with his wife, two of them, go, this is ridiculous for the two of us to be paying this tax bill. Or for Barry and Pauline to go, really, we're paying $14,000 a year in taxes for this place? It's too much. But it's not.
Yeah.
And I think until we get to that point, we all ought to go back to Grill 101 and have another drink, because it isn't getting us anywhere. And whether you take your chart, which is very nice in PowerPoint, and make this a little bit this way, and make it a little bit that way, and then design it a little bit this way, when you come to disseminate it and it costs $25 to disseminate it, you ain't gonna get it. And I don't know, man, it seems to me that either Canton wants to change the dynamic and say we're for development and we're going to pay to support it. We're going to have an economic development officer who makes a reasonable pay, and he's going to have a department, and he's going to have a budget, and that person is going to go out every day of the week and market Canton. Market it to the banks, because the banks are real drivers, to the real estate people and real estate offices, to the developers, and be out constantly to market it. I think until that happens, we're going to be wordsmithing little documents that nobody ever reads.
Could be. I think we're of multiple minds here in town. I agree that we do like it here, but part of being here is we have that combination of, you know, the trafficless winding roads through the countryside, and it's really pretty. But we also have all the amenities of a of a thriving suburban area, and we have access to nature, and we have access to history, and we're pretty darn close to Bradley. And you know, so yes, do we like it the way it is? Yep. Do we like some development? Depends. We get choosy about that. Do we have an appetite to go after to hire an economic development team and pursue it? You know, head over tea kettles. You know,
a chance.
Not that we don't have a chance, but that's just not who we are at the moment. Could we use somebody who is actively engaged in doing something like that in certain areas, like the area from Lawton Road to Canton Village? Yeah, that area needs vision, and it needs some attention. And I'm not talking about big box stores or all that kind of stuff, but some kind of we could have something that's really special here, really special. But as it is, we're waiting for those well-heeled visionaries to come forward and say, I'm going to do this. And when they do, most of the time we celebrate them and we make it happen. But they have to come to us. You know, they're not coming to us because we've necessarily marketed to them. They come to us because it looks like a good opportunity, and then the more they see, the more they like. Or we compare well with other opportunities out there. And remember, whatever's out there, Canton is in competition with all the other towns, all the other areas, all the other project possibilities. I mean, we talked to one vendor, one developer who said, it doesn't start with me. It doesn't start with me as a developer. It starts with a tenant who says, I want to be here. This is the market I want to be in. Mr. Developer or Ms. Developer, what can you do for me? Can you make that happen? And then the developer has to go around and say, find out what the deal is. And that tenant might say, give me five proposals, in different towns or whatever, and I'll pick the best one. I mean, it's business. That's how they do it. But yeah.
And you got to be careful too, because I think that despite the fact, in my opinion, we don't have enough growth. I don't think we do. The flip side to that is Avon.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's just a crowded, screwed up, ugly zoo. Where when you leave Avon Center on Route 10 going towards Simsbury, oh my God, really? Would anybody want to live in that cluster of condos? And not me, man. In a lot of ways, what we have here is just nothing but charming and nothing but nice and the world's little utopia town. We do. And we have a responsibility not to screw that up.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think the idea of going back to...
I feel like you've done like a complete 180 compared to other meetings.
Well,
almost.
I have.
You've seen the full picture.
Yeah.
The idea is maybe we ought to go back to the one-on-one grill and have another drink.
Could be.
Yeah.
So, I have done a 180, haven't I?
I have an interesting comment, just a perspective to add to this for 2 minutes or so. And that is, I was in Farmington Rotary for, 13 years or so. And we had economic development person from Farmington as a member.
They have their own staff person there specifically for that function.
And now, for whatever reason, her name is flying out of my head. But
is it Aaron?
No. But I remember her asking me at some point, she said, Jen, how can we make Farmington walkable? And I said, unfortunately, Farmington gave that away 45 years before you got here. With what they could have done with Route 4 and where the hodgepodge little shops are across from Tunks's golf course there, where they just kind of have that meandering road with, you know, it's just like you said for Canton Village, that somebody has to come in with a master plan. The brilliance of Collinsville is the fact that the Connecticut route follows the river, and our main street is off to the side, which slows everything down. But it's not one of these hodgepodgey little windy things. No, it's a main street, and it's, you know, the buildings were built close together, but they have a general facade with apartments above and mixed use. And if you look at West Hartford Center, the downtown there was built the same way. So was Middletown the same way, where the storefronts were there and some living above it, and with a concept, a master concept for developing a certain amount of property along a certain road. And so by being able to vector people off the main road but have it run parallel to the Connecticut route, to think of, for instance, where the junk shop is and the little antique stores that are behind where you used to be able to go from the Blue House all the way back. I mean, in my mind, that was brilliant that you could have a back road there and could bring it all the way back, just like we have a main street in Collinsville. And that would be the brilliant solution to the Route 44 conundrum.
Could help.
So,
a sketch to that effect in our town plan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of property.
It's nice because everything slows down, then it becomes walkable, and because it's shielded from the main drag, you know, now you can have your restaurants and they can have their alfresco seating without hearing the traffic like poor Dish and Dat, you know. Do you ever see anybody sitting out in front of Dish and Dat? No. It's obnoxious.
Yeah, the idea has been to try to create a true, like, village context there. Development, the same type of development scale you just described in Collinsville to occur there and fill it all in around it.
Yes.
And that's
been, and it backs up against the mountain there and everything. And
yes, it has tremendous potential.
It's all zoned for that now, too, that image you just described.
But but we lack that developer who, you know, who has vision, chutzpah, you know, access to cash.
Property owners not cooperating with each other, and you know.
We had a developer owner there, but just didn't want to pursue it.
Yeah.
For a long time.
Well,
it's a good
to hold that in our mind, though, so that, you know, so
very
it doesn't get
vision.
Developed hodgepodge. And even on the other side, when you go further up on 44, what have you, I mean, it still seems to me those are long, deep lots, you know, and it could be done somewhat similarly.
Shall we move on?
Yeah.
Anyone have anything with Collinsville streetscape?
So I offered last time to look into it. I confess that I didn't drop the ball, but I ended up with a few more health issues that slowed me down. But I did contract Canton Main Street and looked into that and the application. And I think you sent me that information, Neil. And the thing is that I would like to maybe take an hour of your time to go over that with you, because I know there's a lingo that you use in grant applications that really, you know, if I'm just doing this myself, then it's going to sound more like a UConn Health Center grant, and that's not what we need here. And then also, I tried calling ourcantonmainstreet.org. Phone was busy each time I called it over the last couple of days. So I sent an email. Is that Kate?
Kathy Taylor.
Kathy Taylor. So anyway, I haven't been able to get a hold of her, but I did send an email and said, you know, for the two art pads, you know, with mm-hmm. potential sculptures and everything, and a looming grant deadline, you know, maybe we could have a, like a little hour conversation and come up with something there. So that's where I am with that.
Good. Because I think they're, you know, it's good to get that inserted. I made a plug to Kathy already for that initially when I first gave her the grant opportunity. It'd be great if somebody who's not like staff reaches out to her personally like you. But I also know other members of that program are very anxious to try to figure out how to do that covering of this stage, which I get, and I love, you know, like Friday, Saturdays when there's people dancing in the street and you have all this synergy that didn't happen before, you know. Well, it did with when Downright was actually in the downtown proper, if you will. But that is happening now, and if you had the covering, that stuff will still happen. It might just happen more on rainier days, or I'm not, you know, sunnier days, I'm not sure, but it's happening now. And I'm not saying it's not important, but we had a long-term strategy of trying to get that activity that occurs and the economic benefit of it up to farther north Main Street businesses and River Street, which has not gotten a lot of love historically. So that is, you know, that does need some attention.
Yeah. If we could get rid of that frontier switching hub facility up there on River Street.
Right. That would be great.
And have some kind of retail on that side of the side of the road.
I don't know if anybody noticed a Findery moved up to the old...
Oh, sure.
That was a long-term,
long-term ambition on Monica's part.
That's great. now we still have that empty storefront where she was. We need to fill that. And then her and Mama Bear's was like an activated place, but then you get to the next building, you know, and then you lose that activity that if you're going to be walking up from the square, you're more likely to turn around there until we get some more interesting things to keep people moving and more synergy farther up.
Electronic signs at the bank. I think that would do it.
Yeah. So anyway, just some thoughts for
Well, I have to say that the Grindstone seems pretty busy because I, of course, walk through there all the time. And then
pizza.
I can't talk about the tattoo parlor upstairs, but downstairs.
Oh, Good Bones?
Good Bones, thank you. I don't know why I can never remember that. I think of it as the massage parlor for me. You know.
I miss the sweet shop that used to be there.
Yeah,
the sweet shop used to be there.
I miss the sweet shop.
Good Bones is a happy place. And
that's good.
I think it is.
Holding its own there. And ABC is good.
Oh, I haven't been there yet.
What is it?
Oh, just, it's indescribable.
It's kind of like a head shop. It's a head shop.
It's a head shop.
Yes, we got to go.
Which is what, Collinsville has to have a head shop anyway, so.
Got to have it. Got
to
have it.
So anyway, I guess if you reach out to Kathy and get a beat on her and then where they're thinking of applying, you know, and then we can get together.
And then as far as, you know, I mean, here we have thrown out the idea for the turbine and some other, you know, confiscated parts from the Axe factory and what have you. So I guess to talk to the sisters about.
Don't forget the old ski lifts on Sweetheart Mountain.
Oh, I did forget about that. Yeah, the ski lift. Yeah, that's true.
Facilities plan.
Yes.
Right, so we put in the packet the schedule for the WPCA facilities plan. I don't know if you guys remember me a couple months ago. I was concerned that when I met with the WPCA and their consultants starting this plan, that they wanted to just get kind of like a development projection from me, and I was very adamant that they meet with the EDA and the Planning and Zoning Commission before they get too far down the road in their planning. And I believe I represented that the engineer, who's a very good, competent engineer, seemed resistant to that and more interested in following what they had already laid out as a schedule and getting results and information and data together before publicly appearing to EDA or PCC. But going through their schedule, I don't see them actually appearing before any commission until line number 60 in April 2026. But there are a number of other workshops
shown.
This is right at the very end, right?
Well, no, I mean, there was one in October 10th, workshop number two. Workshop number one was in July 2023, which I don't recall. And I don't know if these are workshops with the WPCA or when we hold a workshop, like we're going to be sending out a flyer for a workshop about affordable housing planning in town. And that's going out on our social media channel. It's going out to all our commissioners. It's going out, blah, blah, blah. And we're hoping to draw a crowd of public people to come out and talk about the topic. I don't know if that's part of what they refer to as a workshop. If it is, we should be gearing up for the October 1st workshop, I suppose, as EDA, if we're not going to get our own meeting. But I, in fairness, I did reach out to the WPCA director about this again, and he's great. He thinks it's a great idea, and then he reached out to the consultant to find out, again, where this would fall on the schedule, and I haven't heard back.
I haven't seen any kind of publicity, any kind of outreach, you know, to the public from WPCA. I find, quite frankly, that, you know, that I know they do really good work. They're evidence-based, yeah, and all that kind of stuff. But I am still looking for one statistic. And I've been looking for it, you know, all the time I was in office and still. It's like, what is the sewer capacity? And I have yet to get it.
Will you stop with the sewer capacity already? You're like a broken record.
I am. But it's like, we get all this data, we get charts and stuff. Where do we look to see where we're at? You know, we put all this money, all this time and effort into cleaning up the infiltration problems and the sewer pipes and all that stuff.
What's the effect?
What's the effect? Where's the beef?
Where's the proof?
And, you know, it's somehow, we can't say that yet. So it's like, well, when can you?
Yeah, it's been almost a whole year.
No, it's been almost like 3 or 4 years. Well, it's like, when are we going to know what we got?
Looking at this schedule, an awful lot of data collection and analysis has been occurring, you know, through the months of June, July, even August, starting in September, the hydraulic modeling, right? But
it's kind of like, put it in my hand and say, Do we have capacity or do we not? You know, we've got people running around. I mean, we had Sarah Faulkner here last meeting, right, who said, we need to expand the sewer plant. I've heard it from 100 other people when I was in office. We got to expand the sewer plant, and they've got no basis for that. But we have no basis for saying no.
No.
We don't. We don't need to do that. We got no basis to say, and here's why. Can't do it. And they've got all this data. We should be able to do it.
I thought that kid that came here one time was told us what the sewer capacity was. Didn't he?
No.
No. He said this is the rainfall and this is the flow through the plant. But he never and we said, so what's our sewer capacity? Couldn't tell us.
We only know it based on today's reading of the 180-day average. But we don't know exactly what it is for a consistent line at this point.
Well, I think it's safe to say if you have zero, if it never rains again,
we got plenty of capacity.
We've got 50%.
Yeah.
So the answer is somewhere between 50
and 100.
And 100%.
Yeah, or 100 plus percent.
I know that, but it's like, when you know.
Especially the rain we got on Saturday. Oh, my God.
So you're good at that.
Yeah.
Is that what you do for
but
work?
Yeah, but you know what I mean.
I know exactly what you're talking about. So my guess is that they probably don't have the answer.
But
they probably don't know.
But yet. It's kind of like.
But they got to know how much water's going through that place.
I think they know that. But I don't think how much they can control for yet until, right, you know,
until
all
their
the
flow meter analysis is done.
Yeah.
But it is my guess. They could probably spitball an answer, but
yeah, but
they probably don't want to do that.
At this point, you know.
I wouldn't want to do that if I was in their shoes.
No,
but, you know.
Because someone would like me be the first one to criticize it. So.
Exactly. Or more like me, or Barry. It would be Barry.
No,
it's got to be Barry. Barry would do it.
Barry's nice now. He's
And then, we would go to Grill 110.
If not you, then me. If not me, then you.
Even when you try to be nice, it doesn't help.
Oh, it doesn't work. It doesn't work.
It doesn't work.
No.
Nothing
we're
works,
trying.
Mary. That's the takeaway of today's meeting.
Anne, we're trying to be nice here.
I have nothing to compare it to.
All the other boards and commissions that you've seen.
I have nothing on marketing. Although I guess
it kind of goes back to the previous conversation that we had, though. For
well, did we want to hire a town marketing
economic landscape?
If you made a pitch for the you know what, I was supposed to be on this agenda, which it wasn't, and I it is under annual budget. You could talk about that as a budget submission idea if you wanted.
Wayfinding signs.
Oh yeah, the wayfinding signs.
Or like money for a proposal, like a concrete proposal, so that it's shovel ready.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
But
did you contact a company though about it already for shovel ready? And we had an estimate.
We're kind of off
on a tangent. Yeah, I know. But can we go back to the same company and ask them to do the same thing again, or would you rather go to a different company?
And one of the first things he did was he created an independent position for managing grants.
You know, if they,
because I have that in the packet here, I saved all that for that.
Applying for pursuing the paperwork on grants in all the different departments.
Somewhere here.
I feel like I do. We'll get together. A lot of time is consumed in just paperwork for those sorts of things that. I see the value now, like what they're doing. When you have one position, that's all they do.
Difficult.
That position becomes incredibly busy and productive, and then everybody else can actually do what they're supposed to be doing.
This was just for one time, though.
So you're talking not only coordinating, but actually writing the grants too, like that whole.
Yeah, which always depends on, you rely on the departments to be able to meet them, but somebody packages it, organizes it.
Exactly.
WordSmith gets it out, and then does the paperwork for filing it, does the paperwork for receiving it, identifies the new grants, helps match it up with different opportunities and needs, and then most importantly, the administration of it is. It's just so time-consuming, the administration of some of these grants.
You could actually argue that a position like that would pay for itself, because, you know, if someone in that role is successful and efficient, you're bringing in a lot of money.
Except,
let's do that.
You would then need to take the budget for that position.
Leszek's birthday is today.
And sell it for the Board of Selectmen. Good luck.
And,
You'd have to, I guess you'd have to come up with some concrete numbers to suggest that it will pay for itself. But I hear what you're saying.
Champagne, which is my very favorite.
Okay, but anyway,
I'm probably going to have.
Anyone have a motion? I'll make a motion to approve the special meeting minutes from July 8th.
I will second that motion. I think those minutes are superb.
Let's see. Annual, but anyone else have any ideas for our budget ask? In terms of, so Neil mentioned maybe a grant coordinator. We have the wayfinding
signs
study thing. Yeah.
Barry is talking about a marketing. No, he's
no,
not.
He isn't.
No, he's not.
No. if I believe the October meeting is the one we have to have our act together if we're making a serious recommendation, if I remember how the schedule falls, right? Because something happens in November that we're usually like the day after, our next meeting is like the day after when we submit something like that. It always happens to us.
Yeah, we get screwed. So, yeah.
So everybody mark that down, but give a lot of thought to it. And
yeah. I mean, I like the wayfinding sign one. I don't know how we go about determining how much that would need to be.
Wayfinding signs?
Not the signs themselves, but getting a consultant, if you will, to develop a plan. So how many signs, what the fonts are, what they look like, where they go.
What they say.
Get it so it's shovel ready, so then you can go out and get grant money to execute.
Barry, do you remember this? That was
do.
The original wayfinder sign that kind of got shelved. In Collinsville, kind of like, 2,000 miles to Chicago or what have you.
Any development updates?
Yeah, a couple. I mean, first I want to just mention, we put in the meeting packet, the CROG is holding two affordable housing workshops or housing workshops, one in Sunnington and one in East Hartford. So we put the flyer for that in the meeting packet, but they're trying to get local commissioners to attend that are, and members of the public that, you know, are representations of the region, region's population. And then on September 30th, the Planning and Zoning Commission has a consultant that's going to be conducting a public workshop on updating the town affordable housing plan. That's going to include an interactive exercise with the, whoever shows up. So, you know, it's something that you're interested in, you know, attend or spread the word. We're going to hopefully put a flyer up on the website tomorrow about it. And then as part of the CROG Regional Housing Strategy, they had a call for proposals for three projects in the capital region to hire Bowman in New York to have them conduct a feasibility analysis of developing an existing property in the town for apartments, multifamily housing, et cetera. And so we had submitted a number of proposals, and we were one of the three towns selected. They are going to do a feasibility analysis for the shops of Farmington Valley. Mm-hmm. So that I just got communication about today, that they're looking to set up a kind of a kickoff meeting about that in the next 2 weeks.
For affordable housing?
I think it will include an affordable component, but it is focused on that and high density housing.
So mostly market rate?
Yeah.
Because I guess they only need, what, 20%?
15, isn't it?
15 or 20.
I mean, like the one going up behind the CVS, that's 15%.
15.
But if it's an 830G proposal, it's got to be 30%. And then there's other state programs, which I think give you financing or funding if you're 20% of something. So there's a lot of different context, so I wouldn't pin us down at one number for that.
Oh, okay.
I'll wait and see what they develop.
Neil, so I live across the street from the CVS.
And, okay.
Come down Sunrise, look at it every day.
Yes.
There's hasn't been a sign up about what it is or anything, no?
Well, we have a great location where we used to have a real estate sign there. We could ask them to put something up.
Yeah.
I don't know. That is something we have. We don't normally facilitate that.
I mean, do you know, are they committed to housing there?
Yes.
Do we know what it is, what they're committed to?
Is it four-story or three-story?
It's two four-story buildings making 102 apartments.
It's been approved,
right? It's been approved.
Yeah.
I'm surprised, because for the longest while, I called Bob every day talking about the real estate sign.
Yeah.
For rent or lease or whatever that was there. And then apparently that went away.
Bob told me you were concerned about it, so I had it go.
Yeah, right.
So it went away.
Next day. It was
exactly what
day.
Happened. That was a few successes I've had this year.
All there was a sign about the company
and
what they do.
Yeah.
But I haven't seen anything about apartments.
I don't know if that's typical or not. Is that something we should ask
not,
if they want to do?
Not necessarily. I've seen mostly about 50-50, maybe more than 50% just saying another project by da-da-da.
Right. But is it, I guess, I mean, I'm thinking at Barry's point is it kind of showcases, hey, here's what coming,
what's coming,
all the other
what's
developers
coming with a nice graphic
and
everything.
Real estate interest, et cetera.
Can I just interrupt with two items?
Yes.
We do also have minutes from
August
meeting.
I was going to say that's not on the agenda, so can
but
we
have can
to
add it.
Those in next,
but we can add it to this agenda because this is a regular
it.
Meeting.
Yeah, you can make a motion to add it.
I'll make a motion to add approval of those minutes of the
second.
August 12th.
Yeah. In favor, and then I'll make a motion to. Do you make a motion to add it? Is that what you just
to
said?
To add it. Yeah,
add
I'll make
it.
A
I second
to
it.
Approve it.
Okay, I'll second that. Yeah.
Okay. So
all right. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. And then there's another point of business, which is adjournment.
Mm-hmm. It's 8:09.
No,
Neil, I just think it would be nice to